Okay, so, we've got some really interesting stuff to look at today.
Yeah, this should be a good one.
You sent over this Smith v. Smith case
Right.
out of the Florida Supreme Court back in 2017.
Yeah.
And
Big implications.
yeah, so this is going to be a deep dive into this whole decision.
Absolutely.
And it's interesting because it really kind of sits right at that crossroads
It does.
of guardianship law
Yep.
and the fundamental right to marry.
Yeah.
And you're looking to sort of grasp this,
Get a handle on it.
get a handle on it,
Yeah.
quickly but thoroughly.
Quickly but thoroughly, that's the goal always.
Especially when we're dealing with all these different legal principles that are kind of colliding.
Right.
And this case is a perfect example of that.
It is.
So our mission today is to really pull out those key insights, the factual background, the core legal question, how the court reasoned its way through it. And then ultimately, what it all means for how we think about these really vital legal areas.
Right.
So, what really jumps out at you as the most significant thing about this case when you first look at it?
I think what's really fascinating here is how the Florida Supreme Court had to deal with this statute.
Yeah.
That seems pretty straightforward, at least on its face,
Right.
when it ran right into this deeply personal right and a constitutionally protected one,
Yeah.
the right to marry.
Absolutely.
And so it forces us to think about not just what the law says, the letter of the law,
Right.
but also the spirit of it and the impact it has on individual liberties.
Yeah, so let's kind of set the stage here.
Okay.
We're looking at Glenda Martinez Smith and J. Allen Smith.
Right.
And their relationship began back in 2008, and they ended up getting married in December of 2011. But here's a really crucial point.
Okay.
Allen had been declared partially incapacitated
Right.
back in 2010 because of a car accident that had affected his mental capacity.
Yeah.
So when we say partially incapacitated,
Right.
what exactly did that mean for him in this case?
Well, that's a key distinction.
Okay.
In Allen's situation, the court had taken away his right to manage his own property and to enter into contracts.
Okay.
So they appointed a professional guardian,
Right.
a guy named John Kramer, to handle those things, the financial stuff, the contracts.
Yeah, so he was kind of taking care of all that.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
But and this is really important.
Yeah.
The court didn't say anything about taking away Allen's personal rights,
Right.
like his right to get married.
Yeah.
So it's like saying, he needed help with some parts of his life,
Right.
but he could still make his own choices in other areas.
So he could still make personal decisions, but not financial ones,
Right.
unless the court specifically said so.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, this brings us to a really important part of Florida law. Florida statute 744.32152A.
Right.
And this statute says that if someone like Allen, who's under guardianship
Right.
and has had their right to enter into contracts taken away, then their right to marry becomes subject to court approval.
Right.
So what's so important about that specific phrase, subject to court approval?
Well, that's where the real legal battle starts.
Okay.
Because that phrase, subject to court approval, became the central issue.
Right.
What does subject to actually mean here?
Yeah.
Does it mean you absolutely have to get approval before you get married? Or can you get it after the fact?
Right. So that's the big question.
Oh,
And
exactly.
in this case, Glenda and Allen went ahead and got married
Okay.
without getting that court approval first.
They did.
So what happened next?
Well, Allen had a court-appointed attorney,
Right.
and that attorney went to court to try to get the marriage annulled. And the argument was pretty straightforward.
Okay.
They didn't get permission from the court before they got married. So the marriage isn't valid.
Okay.
Basically, they were saying, the lack of prior approval,
Right.
that's a fatal flaw,
Okay.
makes the whole marriage invalid.
So they were taking a really strict interpretation there.
Very strict.
And initially, both the trial court
Right.
and the appellate court actually agreed with the guardian.
Yep.
They said, yeah, the marriage isn't valid because they didn't get that approval beforehand.
Right.
So why did the Florida Supreme Court even step in?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah.
It shows how our court system works.
Okay.
You've got the trial court, the appellate court, and then at the top, you have the Supreme Court.
Right.
They're the final word on state law.
Okay.
So the Supreme Court probably thought, hey, we need to clarify what this law really means.
Oh, right.
Especially since it affects such a fundamental right.
Right, like the right to marry.
Exactly.
So they were looking deeper than just a surface level reading of the statute.
Absolutely. They were looking at the bigger picture.
Okay, so that brings us to the heart of the matter.
Yeah.
The big legal puzzle that the Florida Supreme Court had to figure out.
Right.
The main question was this.
Right.
Does Florida statute 744.32152A mean that a marriage is automatically void, invalid right from the start?
Yep.
If someone like Alan, who's under guardianship and can't enter into contracts, gets married without the courts, okay?
Right.
Or is the marriage just voidable? Meaning it's good until a court says it isn't.
Exactly.
Now, I know some of our listeners might not be familiar with all the legal jargon.
Yeah.
So can you break down the difference between void and voidable when it comes to marriage?
Sure thing.
Thanks.
A void marriage is basically like it never happened legally.
Okay.
It's as if the marriage ceremony meant nothing.
Got it.
A good example is if two people who are closely related get married.
Right.
Like brother and sister.
Yeah, that's not allowed.
The law says that's a no-go.
Uh-huh.
A voidable marriage, on the other hand,
okay,
is valid until a court steps in and says it's not.
Okay.
So, for example, if someone was forced into getting married,
right,
that marriage is considered legal until the person who was forced goes to court and gets it annulled.
Okay, so it's about whether the marriage was messed up from the beginning.
Right.
Or if it became a problem later on.
Exactly.
So if the Smiths' marriage was void, it would be like it never even happened,
right,
no matter what they intended.
Yep.
But if it was voidable, it would be legally binding. Mm-hmm. Until someone took it to court.
Right.
But the Florida Supreme Court took a different path altogether, didn't they?
They did. They sure did.
What did they decide?
In a 5-2 decision,
okay,
the court said that the marriage wasn't automatically void or voidable just because they didn't get that court approval first.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was a pretty big change from what the lower courts had decided.
Oh, right.
And it all came down to how they interpreted the statute.
Okay. So Justice LaBarga wrote the majority opinion. And he really zeroed in on the plain language of the statute.
Yeah.
He pointed out that even though the statute says the right to marry is subject to court approval,
right,
it doesn't actually say that a marriage without that approval is automatically void.
Yeah, it doesn't use that word, void.
Yeah,
so that was a key point for the majority.
Yeah. Why is focusing on that plain language so important when courts are trying to figure out what a law means?
Well, it's kind of like a basic rule.
Okay.
When courts are trying to figure out what a law means, they usually start by assuming that the lawmakers meant what they said.
Right.
And said what they meant.
Okay, so they take it literally.
Yeah, they try to.
Makes sense.
They don't want to read things into the law
that
aren't actually there.
Okay.
Because that could lead to all sorts of problems.
Right, it would be unpredictable.
Exactly.
Okay.
So in this case, the majority was saying, look, if the legislature wanted to say that these marriages are automatically void,
right,
they would have said so.
They would have used that word.
Exactly.
And this led to them talking about retroactive validation.
Yep.
So can you explain what that means?
Sure.
In this context.
Basically, the court said that Glenda could go to court and ask for approval of the marriage.
Right.
Even though they were already married.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like saying, okay, you didn't get permission beforehand.
Right.
But we can still take a look at it now.
And potentially say it's okay.
Exactly.
So it gives the court some flexibility to look at the situation and see if the marriage is really in the person's best interest.
Right.
And if it is, they can approve it.
Yep. Even though it happened without permission.
Now, the majority's reasoning was based on two main ideas, right? The first one was this concept of legislative intent.
Right.
So what was the court's thinking there?
Well, they figure that the lawmakers wanted to protect people under guardianship from being taken advantage of.
Right.
Especially when it came to money and contracts.
Uh-huh.
But they also thought that the law was supposed to be as unrestrictive as possible.
Okay.
When it came to personal rights.
Like getting married.
Exactly.
So they didn't want to automatically invalidate every marriage just because someone didn't get permission first.
Right.
Because that could be going too far.
Yeah. It might be overkill.
And it might infringe on people's rights.
Exactly.
Even if there was no real harm being done.
Right.
So it's all about finding that balance between protecting people and letting them make their own choices.
Absolutely.
Now, the second big idea was the fundamental right to marry.
Yep. That's a big one.
How did that play into the court's decision?
Well, the court made it clear that the right to marry is a fundamental right.
Uh-huh.
It's protected by the Constitution.
Right.
And this has been affirmed in a bunch of Supreme Court cases.
Like Loving v. Virginia.
Yep, that's a famous one.
And Obergefell.
Right, the one that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide.
Exactly.
So because the right to marry is so fundamental, any state law that tries to limit that right,
right.
has to be really specific.
Okay.
And the language has to be crystal clear.
So in this case,
yeah.
the majority didn't think that the Florida statute was clear enough.
Right. They didn't think it clearly said you have to get approval before you can get married.
Right. So they weren't going to just assume that the law meant to restrict people's right to marry.
Nope. They needed to see it spelled out.
Okay. But this wasn't a unanimous decision, right?
Nope. It wasn't.
We had Justice Polston writing a dissenting opinion.
Right.
And he had a different view on that subject to court approval language.
He did. He had a different take.
What was his argument?
Well, he basically said that the most natural way to read that phrase
uh-huh.
is that you have to get the approval before you get married.
Okay, so he saw it as a prerequisite.
Exactly.
You have to do this before you can do that.
Right. So yeah. in his view, if you don't get that approval first,
uh-huh.
the marriage just isn't valid.
Period.
Period. End of story.
And his main concern was about protecting people under guardianship, right?
Absolutely. That was his big worry.
He was worried that allowing for retroactive approval
right.
would make them more vulnerable.
Exactly.
Because someone could potentially take advantage of them
yeah.
before the court even had a chance to look at the situation.
That was his concern.
So his dissent was really focused on making sure these individuals were protected.
Yep. He wanted to make sure they had safeguards in place.
Now, we also had a concurring opinion.
We did.
From Justice Lawson.
Huh.
He agreed with the majority's decision.
Right.
But he wanted to add his two cents.
Yeah, he had some thoughts of his own.
What was his focus?
He basically doubled down on the whole idea of sticking to the exact words of the statute.
Okay.
He said that interpreting subject to court approval as meaning you need approval before you get married
mm-hmm.
would be like adding words to the law.
Okay.
That the legislature didn't put there.
Right.
And he was saying, look, it's not the court's job to rewrite the law. The court's job is to interpret the law as it's written.
Okay, so he was all about sticking to the text.
Exactly.
And he also pointed out that the statute, as it's written,
uh-huh.
still lets the court review the situation, even if the marriage already happened, so yeah. they still have that power.
They do.
So what does all of this mean for our listeners?
Well, I think the Smith versus Smith case
right.
is a really good example of how courts try to figure out what laws mean.
Right.
Especially when those laws bump up against constitutional rights.
Like the right to marry.
Exactly.
And the big takeaway here is that the specific words of the law
mm.
are super important.
They're crucial.
Courts don't like to assume that a law is trying to restrict someone's rights.
Right.
Unless it's spelled out really clearly.
They need to see it in black and white.
Exactly.
No reading between the lines.
And this case really gets at the heart of guardianship law.
It does.
And that tension between protecting vulnerable individuals and respecting their autonomy and their right to make their own choices.
Yeah, it's a tough balance.
So the Florida Supreme Court was trying to find that sweet spot.
Right.
By really focusing on the exact language of the law
and
not making it stricter than it needed to be.
Exactly.
So for all the law students out there,
yeah.
this case is a great lesson in how to analyze statutes.
Uh-huh.
Always start with the plain text.
Yep.
What are the exact words being used?
Right.
And remember that if a law is ambiguous,
uh-huh.
especially if it affects fundamental rights, courts will usually interpret it in a way that gives people more freedom.
That's a good rule of thumb.
Rather than less.
Yeah.
And it's also a reminder that even small differences in wording
Right.
and how a court interprets those words
mm-hmm.
can have a huge impact on the outcome of a case.
Yeah, they can make all the difference.
You know, we saw that in this case.
Absolutely.
With the different opinions from the justices.
Yeah, reasonable minds can disagree, even when they're looking at the same law.
Now, it's important to point out that this ruling doesn't mean that anyone under guardianship can just go and get married.
Right.
With no oversight at all.
It doesn't mean that.
What it does is prevent a marriage from being automatically invalid just because the person didn't get prior approval from the court.
Right.
It gives the court a chance to review the marriage after the fact.
Yeah.
And decide whether to give it the thumbs up.
It's like a safety net.
So the court can look at the whole situation, consider the person's wishes,
Right.
and ultimately decide what's in their best interest,
Exactly.
rather than just throwing out the marriage because of technicality.
Right. It's a more holistic approach.
So hopefully this deep dive into Smith v. Smith has given you a better understanding of how courts approach statutory interpretation,
I hope so.
especially when fundamental rights are at stake.
Yeah, it's a complex issue.
We saw how the Florida Supreme Court really focused on the specific language of the guardianship statute and how important the right to marry is.
Absolutely.
This case really makes you think about the balance between protecting people
Right.
and respecting their autonomy. You know, it's something to really ponder. If you're interested in exploring this further, you might want to look into the legal concept of the least restrictive alternative
That's a good one.
in guardianship cases, or you could look at cases that deal with the specific rules for getting married
Right.
in different states.
Good idea.
Thanks for bringing this really thought-provoking case to our attention.
My pleasure. I think it's a really important one for law students to know about
Definitely.
because it shows how important it is to really pay attention to the language of the law and to understand how statutory law and constitutional rights interact. And, the dissenting opinion is also a good example of how different ways of interpreting a law can lead to totally different conclusions.
Yeah, it shows that even judges can disagree
They can and they do.
about what a law means.
All the time.
That's the law for you.
That's the law.
Always keeping us on our toes.
Yep. Always something new to learn.
Thanks again. Anytime.
We'll see you next time.
Sounds good.